Would raising the minimum wage in Iowa boost the economy or hurt businesses? It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. It's likely President Obama will talk about increasing the minimum wage when he addresses the nation in his State of the Union speech tomorrow. The proposal to hike the federal minimum wage comes from Iowa's Democratic Senator Tom Harkin. And at the same time, the conversation about raising the minimum wage is happening in Iowa. Today from the Law Library at the State Capitol, should we increase the minimum wage and will it happen this session? Join our conversation after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. Iowa's Democratic Senator Tom Harkin introduced a bill last month that would raise the minimum wage from $7.25 an hour to $10.10 an hour. Over the weekend, he sent an email to his supporters asking for them to sign a petition in support of this proposal, noting that President Obama is likely to mention the call for a higher minimum wage in his State of the Union address tomorrow. The conversation is also happening at the state level. Union groups, business organizations, and workers on minimum wage are talking about how an increase would impact them. Democrats in the Iowa Senate have called a hike in the minimum wage a priority. That's our point of discussion today. Of course, we'd like to hear from you. Are you on minimum wage? Do you own a business and have a feeling one way or the other on how it would impact you? On Twitter, we're at IPR Talk. Find us on Facebook or give us a call, 866-780-9100. Joining us by phone here for the first half of the show is David Cooper, an economics analyst with the Economic Policy Institute. David, thanks for being with us on River to River today.
Thanks for having me, Clay.
So first off, give us some background. Do states have to increase minimum wage just because the feds raise it, or is there a workaround for states that maybe don't want to?
Well, you know, the federal minimum wage is binding for all states. So states are certainly welcome to have minimum wage is higher than the federal minimum wage. But once the federal goes up, all states have to follow suit. If you're not protected by a higher state minimum, then you're protected by the federal minimum.
So why would a state on its own want to raise the minimum wage?
Well, there are a lot of states that have recognized that the federal minimum wage and it, at $7.25, where it is today, is really just too low. There's actually 21 states plus the District of Columbia that all have minimum wages higher than the federal. And in some cases, that's a recognition by state lawmakers that the cost of living just demands a higher minimum wage. In other cases, they may feel that, you know, just out of pure, fairness grounds, workers need to be making more than $7.25. That as the economy is growing and as productivity is going up and our ability to generate income is improving, workers in the bottom should also see their wages rise.
So does employment for minimum wage earners decline then when an increase is approved?
So this is actually one of the most studied topics in economics, and there is still some debate on it. But the best research shows, and we've had plenty of chances to look at this over the last 40-plus years because we've had all these states that have had higher state minimum wages than the federal. You've had neighboring states where one state raised its minimum wage and its neighbor did not raise it. And the best evidence shows that increases in the minimum wage at a modest level, at the level that we've seen, you know, in recent years, really have no effect on employment whatsoever.
So you authored a report at the end of the year that says a hike in the minimum wage would provide a modest boost to the country's economy. Tell us about the research you did for that report and how it led to your analysis.
Sure. So whenever you have a period of labor market slack, when unemployment's high, when consumer demand is depressed like we have today, you know, if you ask any business owner what their biggest challenge right now, what their biggest challenge is right now, they'd say that they just don't have enough customers. There's not enough people out there buying things. Well, if you raise the minimum wage, what you're essentially doing is transferring income from corporate profits, which are at all-time highs, to low-wage workers. And low-wage workers have a much higher propensity to go out and spend that money right away because they have to just to make ends meet. So if you're putting more money in the pockets of people that aren't going to spend it right away, that's going to provide this modest boost to consumer demand. You're going to have more people out there buying things. And so when we did our report, we looked at what would happen on the federal level if you raised the federal minimum wage to $10.10, as Senator Harkin has proposed, we found that that would provide a raise to about 28 million workers nationwide, and that would give them about an additional $35 billion in wages over 3 years, which translates into about another $22 billion in additional GDP that we wouldn't have seen because of that increased consumer spending.
Now, you broke down states individually. Tell us a little bit about how it would play out in Iowa. Well, I guess first, give us some context about the makeup of those that are on the minimum wage in the state of Iowa.
Sure. So we looked at Iowa, and we found there's about 306,000 workers in Iowa that would get a raise if the federal or the state minimum wage went up to $10.10. There's about 216,000, roughly, that are currently earning wages below $10.10, and then you've got about another 90,000 or so that are making just above $10.10 that would also likely see a raise as employers adjusted their overall wage structures. They're majority women. About 58% of these workers in Iowa are women. And the other thing, you know, there's a common stereotype that minimum wage and low-wage workers are all just sort of teenagers working for extra spending money. And we found that this really isn't true. In Iowa, it's about 22% of these workers that would be affected that are teens. The other 78% are 20 or older. In fact, there's a larger number that are 40 years old and older than there are teenagers. The other thing we find is that, you know, a lot of these workers are really relying on this income to support families. About 30% are married. About 20% have children. In fact, there's about 125,000 children in Iowa that would have at least one parent that would see a raise under this proposal to raise the minimum to $10.10. So that's pretty significant. You know, it shows us that this isn't just extra spending money. It's people who are really relying on this income just to get by every day.
It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. Are you on minimum wage? Have you ever lived on it? We want to hear your stories. Give us a call, 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's bring another voice into the conversation here. At the beginning of the year, Des Moines Register, State House and politics reporter Jason Noble wrote about the minimum wage debate in a piece with the headline, Minimum Wage Hike Faces Strong Opposition in Iowa. Jason's with me here in the State House Law Library. Jason, thanks for being here.
Hi, Clay.
So you talked with a number of people who are on minimum wage and even featured a couple in a Des Moines Register video. Who did you talk to and what did you get from these conversations?
Right. I talked to a couple of local business owners. One was Scott Carlson. He's a managing partner at Court Avenue Brewery, which is a popular brew pub in downtown Des Moines. And then I also talked to several of the owners of Tasty Tacos, which is more of a fast food quick service type restaurant throughout the Des Moines metro. So that was kind of the business side that I talked to. And then I also talked to a couple of workers who work at restaurant and other low-wage jobs about the challenges that they have.
And talk about those challenges. There was a lengthy conversation that was posted on the Des Moines Register's website. Talk about the challenges they faced and what they would see as a real benefit of an increase in the minimum wage.
Sure. I talked with Amalia Hernandez, who is a woman from Des Moines. She works at Burger King for $8.25 an hour. And that's a little bit above the minimum wage. And she told me that she actually came in at $8.25 because she was working the night shift. And when she was shifted over to the day shift, they tried to drop her down to $7.25. She and her husband both work in jobs with lower wages. Her husband is a dishwasher and makes about $9 an hour. And she described just a real struggle to make ends meet from week to week. She was literally living paycheck to paycheck where, you know, the rent was $638 a month, and that ate up so much of her paycheck 1 week that it was difficult to buy groceries, to pay the utility bill. A lot of it kind of came down, it sounded to me like a cash flow problem for workers making these wages where, you know, they have the rent check that's due on the first, and often they don't have the money until their next paycheck, and so they're getting hit with late fees. There's just a lot of those kind of smaller frustrations and challenges that come up when you're working at that, and you've got to, you know, pay the rent, pay the utilities, And then you're kind of using what's left over to buy groceries.
So the cost of living almost changes when you're not keeping up with your bills, and there's all these costs that keep getting added to living expenses.
That was her experience, yeah.
So talk about a little bit on the flip side here. You spoke with some of these business owners. How did they say that would impact? Would they see any layoffs or anything like that?
Not layoffs necessarily. It was really interesting talking with Scott Carlson, who also was just elected to the board of the National Restaurant Association. So he's taking a kind of a big picture look at this. He owns a brew pub and also another restaurant in downtown Des Moines. And he was looking back in our conversation about the last time the minimum wage went up from $5.15 to $7.25. And he was saying that for his business and for his the type of restaurant that he has, it actually wouldn't raise wages for anyone except for the servers, the waiters and waitresses who make a percentage of the minimum wage and then make the rest of their money through tips. And his point was they actually already are among the highest paid workers in the restaurant, and a minimum wage would raise that salary further. While the impact for the business itself is that he had to reduce staff, he said, by about 15 to 20%. He did that through attrition rather than layoffs, and then also raising the menu prices over time. So it represented a big cost to him that was actually benefiting some of the better paid workers at the restaurant.
Okay, David Cooper, curious, those who make just above minimum wage, mm-hmm. would they also see an increase, or, I mean, does it raise?
Yeah, as I said before, it does tend to raise wages for people who are just above the minimum because, you know, if you think about someone, say, a shift manager at Old Navy, that person might be making, say, $10.50 an hour. If now suddenly all the people they're managing are making $10.10, they're probably going to get a raise as well just to sort of preserve some of that internal wage structure. But if you don't mind, I want to just respond quickly to what Jason was saying about this business owner and his experience. That strikes me as a little odd what he was saying about the wait staff getting the raises, because what Jason was referring to is there's a tipped minimum wage, which is basically the base wage that's paid to any employee that receives the majority of their income in tips. And at the federal level, and I believe Iowa, this is the case in Iowa as well, it's only $2.13 an hour. So if the federal minimum wage or even the Iowa minimum wage goes up, the way it's been since 1996 was that the regular minimum wage would go up, and if a tipped employee didn't earn enough tips in a given week to make a wage equal to the federal minimum wage or the Iowa minimum wage, then the employer would have to make up the difference. But you know, that's really hard to enforce, and it's not really clear that workers would necessarily still be getting that minimum wage. So, you know, in a restaurant situation, probably the people that are going to benefit from a higher minimum wage, unless you're also raising that tipped minimum wage, which I think there's a strong argument to be made that it should also be raised, is the people in the back of the house, the kitchen staff that are being paid wages and aren't getting any tips. So I think, you know, what that one business owner was saying, I'm kind of skeptical of his assessment of the whole thing.
Jason, you care to respond to that?
His point, I think, and he was talking of his limited experience with his two restaurants, which I understand to be pretty successful and maybe at the higher end of the restaurant market. And he said that his, you know, kitchen workers, the back of the house employees were making well above minimum wage. And so that was kind of the starting point coming in him, is that he's already paying, even in the teens per hour to that staff. I did talk with the owners of a fast food chain here in the Des Moines area. And, their perspective was obviously different, where this would probably increase their wages more across the board because their employees are lower paid. And they also said that that this would be a challenge for them, but probably something that they would find a way to absorb over time. One interesting thing that I got from them was that they were worried about this sort of in conjunction with the Affordable Care Act, which is the health care law that is going to require in about a year's time employees who work more than 30 hours to get healthcare coverage. And looking at it as a business, that is going to be a big expense that they'll have to take on. And it would be a lot to take on that new healthcare expense along with an increase in the minimum wage.
David, do you, when you were looking at the individual states, when you were looking at Iowa and comparing that to others, is the same kind of research, the same kind of studies being done? Do all states look the same, or are they different in their makeup as to how you're analyzing the data on a minimum wage impact on that state?
Yeah, well, of course, because some states have higher minimum wages, an increase in the federal minimum wage is not going to affect those states as much. For example, California just passed an increase in their state minimum wage that will raise their state minimum wage to $10 an hour by 2015. So in the case of California, raising the federal to $10.10 really isn't going to have that much of an impact on California. Then again, you have other states like Texas, for example, where you have a really large number of low-wage workers. In Texas, if you raise the federal minimum wage up to $10.10, you're going to see a pretty significant portion of the Texas workforce getting a raise. So it certainly is more significant in some states than others. Southern states tend to have lower wages on average than the more northern or the coastal states. So in those states, you're going to have more workers or a larger share of the workforce getting a raise from an increase. Iowa, you know, it tends to be a little bit less than the country as a whole. About 21% of workers in Iowa we estimate would get a raise, which is about in line with the national numbers. But you know, it's kind of in the middle of the pack, I would say.
Christine writes in: is there a proposed phase-in, and what are the details of that?
Yeah, so there is. In fact, and that's another good point to make, is that no one's talking about raising the minimum wage to $10.10 overnight. This is something that would take place over 3 years. So where the federal minimum wage right now is $7.25, the proposal is to raise it to $8.20 in next year, and then to $9.15 the year after that, and then to eventually get to $10.10 sometime in 2016. So it would be a phase in. It would give businesses time to adjust, like Jason was talking about.
So what's the likelihood of a federal increase? I mean, it seems like every time that we're talking about Congress, we're talking about how they're not getting something done. Are we going to see an increase at the federal level?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not a political expert, but what I will say is that there is a lot of public support for this. Every poll that I've seen says that a majority of Americans support raising the minimum wage. There was a Gallup poll not too long ago that had it at about 70% of Americans supported raising the minimum wage to about $10 an hour.
I believe it was 76%. 76%,
yeah, so even higher. And so, you know, it's really a question of whether that public sentiment is translated into action in Congress, and I do know the rumor here in Washington is that the president is going to be speaking a lot about this in his State of the Union address, trying to really push this issue because it is very popular, and you know, a lot of people are recognizing that it's well past time to raise the federal minimum wage.
And I am getting a note from my producer that says that increase was up to about $9 an hour that we're talking about with the Gallup poll approval.
Is that right?
Rating. Yeah. And so I'm curious now, Jason, you are here every day covering the State House. Nice to break away and talk with these different people that are on minimum wage or talking about the impact it would have on their business. What do you see the likelihood of the political playout of something getting passed at the state level?
I'd say it's pretty unclear at this point. We had early, even before the session began, some Democratic senators, Democrats control the Iowa Senate, talking quite a bit about this and indicating this would be a big priority for them. Senator Thomas Courtney from Southeast Iowa indicated that he's going to introduce a bill that mirrors the Harkin bill at the federal level with the 10-10 phased in over time. But we haven't seen a bill yet. And actually, late last week, Senator Gronstall, the majority leader, seemed to kind of step back from it a little bit. He indicated there was no timeline for introducing a bill, and he said that they were looking for more consensus, for more bipartisan support before they were ready to move forward. And bipartisan support means Republican buy-in. Republicans have been far less interested in this. The House Speaker, Craig Polson, describes this as a potential burden for businesses, and there just seems to be a lot less interest on that side. So we'll see what happens, I guess.
Well, I want to go now to Denise from Des Moines. Denise, you have a story about living on minimum wage.
Hi. You can't live on minimum wage. It's the bottom line. I am 55 years old. I have two bachelor's degrees, and up until 2.5 years ago, I had a good full-time paying job. Due to downsizing, I was laid off, and I never imagined I would have trouble getting another job. I applied to every job I thought I was even remotely qualified for. The only place, and I won't mention their name, that would hire me, or that they even got a call back from, is a chain, they're a food service chain, of a national chain, and they start their employees at minimum wage. But because I have 2 bachelor's degrees, they offered me $8 an hour. And $8 an hour, you know, I can pay my necessary bills, but it leaves me no money to, you know, spend money to go out to eat, to go to a movie, you know, holiday gifts, things like that. So I firmly believe it would definitely help the economy if people had, you know, extra money in their pocket that they could spend on other things. And if I had additional expenses, say health care, medical, I would probably be bankrupt. I'm one of those people who is one paycheck away from being homeless.
So, David, do you care to weigh in there a little bit about Denise's story and how that kind of has played out in a lot of the data that you've analyzed?
Yeah, so Denise's story, unfortunately, is becoming a more common one. You know, with the recession, we did, you know, we saw these enormous job losses, and you have a lot of older, better educated workers that are having to take lower and lower paying jobs just because they're the only jobs that are available. In fact, we looked at this just recently. If you look at the low wage workforce today versus what it was, say, in 1968, the low wage workforce today is far older and far better educated than the low wage workforce in 1968. But in 1968, the minimum wage at that time, if you adjust it to today's dollars, was about 23% higher. It was about $10 an hour back then, when these workers, a lot of them, in fact, about half of them at that time, had never even finished high school. Today, the vast majority have some finished high school, and many of them also have college experience, like Denise is describing. So, you know, the fact that we're paying workers less today than we were 45 years ago, even though our workforce is older, better educated, more productive than ever before, is, you know, it really should make people think about this a lot, about what sort of economy we want to have. And Denise is right. I'm sorry. Did you want to say
that? I was just going to say, why doesn't the minimum wage go as far today as it once did?
Well, I mean, because we've let its value erode over time. So the minimum wage, you know, every year that the minimum wage is not raised, inflation eats away at the purchasing power of a minimum wage income. So you can afford to buy less and less each year unless you raise that minimum wage. And there's actually about 10 states that have taken action on this, 10 states that automatically increase their state minimum wage each year based upon inflation, so that they know that low-wage workers in those states, the purchasing power of their paycheck is going to remain constant. And this is something that's actually part of the Harkin bill at the federal level. It would raise the federal minimum wage to $10.10 and then peg it to inflation, so that each year it would be increased a little bit based upon however much prices have gone up.
Okay, David Cooper, economics analyst with the Economic Policy Institute, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Des Moines Register State House and politics reporter Jason Noble, thanks for dropping by and talking with us.
Thank you, Clay.
And thanks to Denise for calling in as well. After the break, we'll bring in a couple lawmakers from the Iowa House of Representatives, a Democrat and Republican, to talk about the chances of a minimum wage hike this session. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. President Obama is likely to bring up an increase in the minimum wage in his State of the Union address tomorrow. There are lawmakers here in the Iowa Senate who have said they'll make a minimum wage increase a priority this year. In our first legislative show, just a couple of weeks ago, we talked with House Majority Leader Linda Upmeyer and Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl. In that interview, we asked Senator Gronstahl if there wasn't divided government, if Democrats controlled both legislative chambers and the governor's office, what might a Democratic agenda look like? Here's what he said.
I think we're going to try and move something on minimum wage. The governor signed an increase in the minimum wage back in the 80s. The Speaker of the House voted for the last minimum wage increase we had in 2007. It's been 7 years since we did that. And people at that end of the wage spectrum have certainly lost ground. So that's one of the things I'm confident if we had a Democratic House and Senate and governor that we would increase the minimum wage in the state of Iowa.
Listening to those comments, he begins by talking about the current governor and House Speaker and how they've handled minimum wage increases in the past, and then says he's confident they would pass it if they controlled both chambers and the governor's office. Senator Tom Courtney has been a strong proponent for a minimum wage increase for a number of years. When asked about chances for improving an increase this session, or approving rather, here's what he said in December.
I can get it through the Senate, but I don't know that the House would We'll accept it, and the governor probably won't sign it. But I think it's where we ought to be. We ought to be, our minimum wage ought to be with the feds.
There at the end, he refers to a federal proposal that would raise the minimum wage to $10.10 per hour, supported by Senator Tom Harkin and others. He also said it had taken him a number of years to get the last minimum wage increase through the legislature. So when we talked with Senator Gronstahl 2 weeks ago, we wanted to clarify whether he thought it could be approved this year or whether it was just the beginning of the conversation. Here is that exchange.
Senator Tom Courtney of Burlington has really been the champion on wanting to raise the minimum wage. He said it's a long path to try to reach some kind of consensus on that. Do you see the conversation starting now and evolving?
I'm actually hopeful we can get something done on it. And like I said, the Speaker of the House, the last time it took almost a decade. Well, this is the seventh year. We're getting up to near almost a decade again, and recognizing that particular segment of the population has been left out of any economic growth that's been happening, I think there's a real opportunity there.
So we were under the impression that this was an issue Senate Democrats wanted to both talk about and were hopeful they could move forward this year, but when we asked them to come on this show to talk about it, they declined. A couple who people who did not decline are here with me, Representative Greg Forstall. He's the chair of the House Labor Committee, a Republican from Macedonia. Representative Forstall, thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Clay.
And Representative Ruth Ann Gaines, a Democratic representative in the Iowa House and a proponent for raising the minimum wage. Representative Gaines, thanks for being here.
I'm very glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Representative Forstall, we'll start with you. Do you have any theories about why the Senate Democrats would not want to be talking about this today on the show?
I've heard rumors, and of course there are a lot of rumors in this building, but I've heard that once they started counting votes, there was a little problem with coming up with the sufficient numbers.
Representative Gaines, do you have any theories on this?
I would agree that it's going to have to be a bipartisan approach, and numbers at this time may not be there.
So, Representative Forstall, what would it take for Republican buy-in in the House for an increase in the minimum wage?
Well, as has been mentioned previously today, the last time we did this, which I believe was 2007, we voted on it, and there were a lot of Republicans and Democrats in the House who voted for it. In fact, the majority leadership, which is here now, all voted for it as well. So there is that possibility, but we are looking to see whether that comes through the Senate first.
Representative Gaines, how do you see? I'm very much sure that if it came up for a vote, that many Democrats in the House would be voting for it. How do you see support needing to be harnessed in the Senate from Democrats?
I think that we need to approach the Senate and let them know the realistic situation within the state of Iowa. Poverty is definitely on the rise; that can't be refuted. In my district alone, poverty has increased over 10% since 2007. I think real-life situations, real-life scenarios, and the understanding that we will not lose as a state, but we will gain in many ways. Families will be reinstated to normalcy, and jobs will be created. It won't hurt the economy. I think with that realistic, non-threatening approach, we can get hands across the aisle to get this passed.
Representative Forstall, do you see a negative impact on businesses? We spent a lot of the time in the first half hour of the show talking about that.
Right. Last week on MSNBC, Microsoft founder Bill Gates was asked about the minimum wage, and he said that it's well understood that there would be some jobs that would be eliminated. There would be some jobs that would be moved to third world countries, and there would be a tendency then to go into automation. So it's not really an easy situation to describe because this kind of change in the law would have a ripple effect throughout the economy. When we looked at what's happened in the past, we have seen jobs go away, and I'm concerned that if we take government action at this time that causes jobs to go away, that we have an obligation to step in with other aid at that time.
Brenda in Huxley writes in, says, with USDA's recent figure of 420,000 Iowans on food stamps, wouldn't it make sense for Iowa businesses that minimum wage be increased in Iowa? People cannot spend unless they have money. Right now, we taxpayers are paying for their food stamps, but human pride being what it is, most Iowans want to have a living wage and pay their own way. What is not to like about increasing the minimum wage appropriately? How would you respond to what Brenda writes in?
We need to have people prepared for high-paying jobs. Now, over the last 3 years, we've increased the amount of money going to community colleges by 22%. And we think this is where we can help people get to a level where they don't have to live on minimum wage. And I know it's difficult because when I was young and single, I lived on minimum wage for a while. And I always knew when I got a paycheck, I better go out and buy some crackers and some tomato soup because that was what I would eat at the end of that period. But if we make the investments in the community colleges, in the universities that we have, like we have in the past, and we have apprenticeship programs that have been created, this is the way to go. It's to improve people's job prospects to get those living wages that they want. And we have jobs unfilled now in Iowa, which are good middle-class jobs because people simply don't have those skills.
Representative Gaines?
I think making opportunities for people to increase their skills for better jobs is perfect. And I do like the fact that over the last few years we have invested more money in community colleges and universities. But I happen to teach at a community college, Urban Campus, Des Moines Area Community College Urban Campus, and I've taught there for 43 years. So I see firsthand the struggles that people have. It's not enough. I wish I could count how many students who are on minimum wage enroll in community colleges, but simply can't keep up the pace with being able to balance job with family, with trying to make ends meet. Wouldn't it be wonderful if they could have more, these students could have more of a balanced life so they would be able to more securely and effectively continue to enroll in these classes and finish them so that they could acquire these skills. I don't like the fact that so many students that I see are on government food stamps or government help. We want to try to release people from these positions, and if they can work and make better money, that can happen right now.
We talked to a number of business owners and associations before the show and have some comments to play here. Jessica Dunker is the president and CEO of the Iowa Restaurant Association. She says the average employee in her industry makes $9.10 per hour. She says most restaurant workers making minimum wage are teens or under the age of 25. That said, she's still opposed to an increase. Here's what she
said. We are opposed to a minimum wage increase, but for reasons different than people might realize. We do enter much of our workforce into our establishments at greater than minimum wage. But more importantly, we look for ways to provide growth for people. So as an example, if you are someone who is now earning $10 an hour in our industry, if the minimum wage goes to $10 an hour, then we struggle with how do we then show that we value you at 30% above minimum wage and move you to, say, $15 an hour. And so it's the aggregate effect of a minimum wage increase that really, really hurts our industry.
Bill Leixenring is owner of the Oxyoak Inn at the Amana Colonies. He says some restaurants will almost certainly close if the minimum wage is increased.
The average pre-tax profit for a restaurant today is 3 to 5%. So you can see very, very low margin. And if the minimum wage would increase, as the bill is in Congress now, it's from $7.25 to $10.10 per hour, represents a 40% increase over 2 years. How on earth can we raise our prices? There's no way we can raise our prices 40%. How on earth can we cover that additional expense? The only way we can do it is cut hours, lay people off, or unfortunately don't hire people. And that's counterproductive to really what this country is really needs at this point in time.
And finally, Michelle Hurd, president of the Iowa Grocery Industry Association, says studies have shown that employment for minimum wage workers has declined when the minimum wage has been raised in other states.
Iowa's grocery industry plays an important role in molding our young workforce. And if the minimum wage increases significantly, grocers could be forced to make difficult decisions and adjustments to their labor costs by reducing employee hours, foregoing hiring, and reducing the number of employees on staff.
So, Representative Gaines, there was a lot of folks in industry saying that it would have negative impact on them. How would you respond to those comments?
Well, given the increase happening over 2 years, certainly gives these people in industry an ample time to prepare for what is going to happen. And I don't agree that the majority of people on minimum wage at this point are under 25. There are a lot of people in their 30s, 40s, and even 50s who are underskilled and who need this increase. And so I think if we're looking at the situation, the positivity of increasing the minimum wage far outweighs any negativity that may happen. They ought to live in my district, which has a great deal of poverty, and see the struggling that people are having. People who stout or who talk about these differences don't see the real life picture, and that bothers me.
Representative Forstall?
I think your listeners can hear that there's a lot of discussion that needs to take place in this area. And we need to sort out. We've had kind of a situation with maybe some dueling economists, because I was just reading an article this morning by nationally known economist who reviewed 100 studies of minimum wage effects. And he found in his mind that 90% of them would mean a decrease in jobs. I'm very concerned about that. But again, we need to keep the opportunities open. We need for people to have the attitude that if they're at minimum wage, it is not a permanent situation.
I want to go. For some people it is, though. That's the unfortunate part. For some people on minimum wage, it is. They can't see a way out, and the opportunities that we are providing in education is not available to them because they can't balance family life and education life with what they have to do. They just can't do it. Some people are stuck. And I think we have an obligation to help those people.
Are you stuck on minimum wage? Do you own a business and have a thought one way or the other? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. We'll go now to Shannon in Davenport. Shannon.
Hi. I was just wondering what their thoughts were when they're saying that this may cost jobs and all the negative impacts. What about CEO pay being what it is today, where you have CEOs making $40 million a year, you have the CEO of Papa John saying he can't afford to insure his employees, all that sort of thing. How do they feel about that?
Representative Forstall.
Well, I'm CEO of my own little company. I don't make $40 million a year, I can tell you that. So I don't understand that kind of money. And so it's difficult for me to believe that anyone's worth that kind of money. But then look what the football coaches make. So, in terms of insurance, affordable care has changed a lot of things. We talk about how a small change in minimum wage ripples throughout the economy, but the Affordable Care Act, of course, has rippled in many, many ways. The people being dropped from their coverage and the increase in cost of the coverage, and not to mention the requirement that anyone with 30 hours or more next year has to be covered. So, again, it just illustrates that when government requires a change in the economy, it has a ripple effect that often has undesirable effects.
Representative Gaines?
Well, I think that it proves that economic inequality in our society is very, very real. And as a Democrat, I believe in restoring the middle class. And I think that one of the good ways of doing that is providing a living wage for folks. And CEOs who make millions of dollars probably don't understand that, even if they started out that way. They're in another wage, a wage increase, and they just don't get it. But I'm out for people who don't have it.
We know, and we talked about it in the first half of the show, that it's an issue that enjoys quite a bit of public support, with that November Gallup poll that showed that 76% of Americans approved of raising the minimum wage to $9 per hour. Do you think an Iowa poll would show a big difference in opinion there? Representative Gaines, we'll start with you.
I have seen some polls in which 55% of Iowans are in favor of increasing the minimum wage. And several years ago, it was only 36%. So as time passes, we do have seen an increase in favorability.
Representative Forstall?
I don't want to predict exactly how this bill will come through committee and what the results will be. But clearly, there needs to be a discussion. There needs to be a public education in the cost of this as it comes throughout the economy. And I would hate to have the Oxbow Inn close. That's one of my favorites.
Okay, a plug for the restaurant there. So talking about it more.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea to get some real faces and to be able to put a face on the issue. That always helps. And even a public movement in favor of that, a public hearing in favor of that is definitely something that would be very appropriate. We need lots of discussion. I want people to see the real life situation.
And we heard Senator Courtney say that it took quite a few years for it to pass the last time. Representative Forstall, you were there when that was moving forward. What was the climate like at that point?
I was there at the end of that process. Okay. That was my freshman year.
Okay.
So I can't tell you what it was like for the years ahead of that. Only I can describe that at that time, it took a while to get to that discussion, but it does take time to develop, especially something as important as this.
Representative Gaines, if you want a minimum wage increase, why not wait for it to be approved at the federal level? Why take action in Iowa?
I think now is the time, simply because, as I said earlier, poverty is increasing in Iowa. And if you look at single moms and their children and how a lot of these kids are struggling in school, they have to be able to have a healthy breakfast and a home life of a parent who can spend some quality time with their children in order to improve education. That's only going to happen if parents can make a little bit more money so that they don't have to worry, so that they don't have to have three or four jobs and take away from family life. I think that improving minimum wage would just be so much a positive thing for the dignity of all Iowans that we need to do. We needed to do it yesterday.
So if it was approved, do you think Governor Branstad would sign it?
I would hope that he would. And that's why I think prior discussions and a public hearing would be appropriate. I would hope that he would. And House Republicans, I would hope also that they would come on board and work with us.
Representative Forstall?
Well, I think you look at another debate we've been having for years, and that's over fuel taxes and how are we going to finance the roads. We understand that will have to be a bipartisan solution whenever we get to it. The governors over my terms up here, my 8 years, have always been kind of a stumbling block in that regard. So I think we need to have some direction from the governor if we're going to go forward with this. But again, we're waiting to see what the Senate will do with this. And if we can't get it through the Senate, it's an election year. I just can't see it happening in the House.
Sure. So you don't see or have a feeling one way or another about how it might play out in your committee?
I haven't done a count yet. I have not.
Okay. Representative Gaines, how long do you know, we were talking about a public hearing, get people out to talk about it. Once that public hearing happened, how long would the conversation have to take for lawmakers to make some kind of decision?
Well, it depends on legislation that's already there. A lot of times people already have their minds made up even before the public hearing. So my hope would be, in addition to that, we can really have some honest conversations across the lines within the House and within the Senate to let it happen, if not this year, real, real soon, because it's overdue. It's really overdue.
And how much on the mind of your constituents would you place this as far as priorities of things when they talk to you in
number
your district?
Number one or number two?
What's the other one that flops with it?
Education. They seem to go hand in hand. We talk about improvements in K-12 as well as higher ed, and to me that depends on affordability as well as accessibility as well as being able to do it. And we need all those things.
Right, and to follow up on that, it took us years to get to the education reform that we did last year. It took us years to get to the property tax reform that we did last year. And I thought we did some very significant work in the legislature, bipartisan work in the legislature last year. This is another piece of that kind of work, which will take a bipartisan effort.
I agree, and I just hope it doesn't take long, because some people are crying for help.
All right, Representative Gaines, Representative Forrestal, thank you both for being on River to River today.
You're welcome. It was
Bye-bye.
Fun.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from John Pimble. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River are available at iowapublicradio.org. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters.